What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everyone.
And we are back for episode 83 of the Gamecast. We were absent. This typically happens every so often, considering, you know, it's COVID season still and things happen and whatnot. And whenever you get sick, you kind of have to go, is it COVID? Is it not COVID? Even if you don't have the, you know, the symptoms, you know, like lack of taste and stuff like that, you still kind of wonder. And so last week, I've been, you know, not feeling well. I had some stomach issues. And then just recently I've had a cold and, you know, my daughter's had a cold and, you know, we're also fighting pollen everywhere. So allergies. Yeah. And that's been really fun. Not really. And so, you know, the fear there is like, do you have COVID? Thankfully, the answer was no, we don't. And we were able to kind of get through it, but it wouldn't have made for a good podcast recording considering that I couldn't talk without sounding off, without coughing. Heck, I might have to mute to blow my nose. You know what I'm saying? So like, it just wasn't a good time. And so we took a week off. Plus, I was on vacation. I was like, you know, why not? Why not? Let's take a week off.
Right.
But we are back, though. And I'm happy to say that during my brief vacation, I was able to catch up on a bunch of stuff and watch things and play video games and all that good stuff. Because being sick, you can't really do much but watch stuff and sleep. And so that's what I did. And so I was able to finally catch up on the South Side show on HBO. It is great. I love the fact that it's a family affair. There's the two writers are, or the two head writers are friends from college, but the starring cast, so like the main two police officers, they're husband and wife in real life, which is great, that being able to work with your wife. And usually you kind of, people kind of have like a problem with that. Like, I gotta work with my wife. But the fact that it's done in such a, you know, they're both acting and they're not husband and wife on the show. They're actually, you know, just partners. But the fact that you kind of get to do this thing where you, I don't want to say role play, but you're two different people, essentially, I think is really cool. And the fact that you keep it in the family, that's two different checks, by the way, just letting you know. It's two different checks coming to the same spot. Like, you know what I'm saying? And so I thought that was really cool. But then also, one of the head writers got his older brother, who also writes on the show, is also in one of the starring roles as well. So they have family members, friends, you know, friends from high school or, you know, elementary, friends from college. All of these people are in this show and all of them do a wonderful job. They're all funny and the writing is very smart. And it's one of my new favorite shows on HBO. Definitely go check it out. If you like Insecure, it's not, I don't want to say like, I don't want to get, you know, paint a wrong picture. It's not like Insecure in the sense of how Insecure is built, but it's like Insecure in how it shows another side of blackness so that even though you're not from Chicago, you're going to understand what's happening. You're going to know, or how, you know, if you're black, I should say, you're going to vibe with what's going on, if that makes it, you know, any clearer. And enjoy it, hopefully. I thought it was funny, especially season two. There's a couple of times where I laughed out loud and I accidentally woke people up in my house.
Oh,
and I didn't
yeah.
expect that. Because comedy is hard to do. Like, comedy is, you know, because it's so, it's like everything is subjective, but it's extremely subjective. Like, what's funny to one person isn't to someone else. And there's like these insider jokes with black people, you know what I mean? And so there's things that I'm like, I get it, but it's interesting, or I like this, but it's not really funny. No, there were times where I was like, oh my, like I had to pause the show because I was laughing so hard. Very, very good show. Definitely go check that out. I also got to catch up on a bunch of films. I played some of my games that were in my backlog. One of them I beat was Disco Elysium. I finally got to play this game. It was one of the dopest things about video games is that because they release all the time, there's always something to play. You're never, you know, have to search too far for something new. And so I had the game. I bought it last year, I believe it was on sale. And I was like, you know what? Everyone's talking about this game. Let me try it. Bought it. And immediately I hated the protagonist. Now, this is a good thing, mind you. But when I started out, I hated the protagonist. It's an RPG. You're playing a detective who has to solve. There's like a murder mystery, whatever that he has to solve. And so immediately I'm engaged because I'm like, oh, this is cool. This is like some Clue stuff. But he's very unlikable because when you start the game, he wakes up in a drunken stupor and he doesn't remember anything about his life. And so you can imagine going into these conversations with these NPCs, you actually have to try to explain why you're there without knowing anything. Like, the game opens up with him waking up on the floor. So you are put in the position that he's in. Like, I don't know anything about him because I just started playing the game. And he doesn't know anything about himself to give me. And so people are like, either like, you're a cop. He's like, I am a cop. And I'm like, crap. I'm looking at the options that I can, you know, click to say, you know, I'm a cop, or I forgot my badge, or I don't know where my shoes are. And I'm like, I don't want to see any of this crap. Like, I don't drink. Like, I don't want, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, who is this dude? You know,
I know, and that guy. I'd probably be really good at that game. Not man. For me. I'm not the alcoholic, but I know them.
I've known some of them, definitely, but I've never, like, to black out to that extent to where you don't know what happened over the last 3 days.
Yeah,
is wild, right? But then it's, you have really to play. Wild. And so what's interesting also is that you can steer his life from that point forward. You have to deal with it, though. You have to deal with, you know, your fellow police officers making fun of you. You have to deal with people looking at you in disgust. You know, you smell bad. You have to look at all that stuff and try to navigate this world in a way that makes him look better. So it's like, you know what? Even though I don't have all his background information, he does have an astute ability to, depending on how you, you know, level him up, he has an astute ability to just know things or to just glean information from the environment. Kind of like Psych. You know, he looks around, he's like, oh, I see some stuff. This makes sense. Let's put two and two together. And so you can actually, by the end of the game, you can make him come around to be a really good person. You can make him a better detective and all this other stuff. But from the onset of the game, it's like you're fighting an uphill battle just with knowledge of himself. Before you get into the clues of the case and, you know, how people are there's this huge political thing that's going on, and, you know, rival factions and all this other stuff, you have to just try to navigate him being a cop. And it's like wild. It's really, really, it's a good game. I'm probably never going to play it again because, and I say that not as a diss. I say that because there's a lot of different endings and things that you can do. But with these type of games where there's multiple endings or choices, I feel like I've made the choices I would make. And so if I were to play it again, and let's say I just, like, forgot everything, I would make those exact same choices. So it would feel like, I don't want to say dis, it wouldn't feel right if I went back and just made different choices arbitrarily because it's against kind of like who I am. You know what I'm saying? Like, I guess if I was role-playing a bad guy, like a bad detective, I'm like, okay, I want to see what the bad detective does. Or I got a new character maybe. But, like, if I go back to replay it just to see a different ending, I'm going to instinctively make the same choices. So I typically don't go back and play those, but I really enjoyed it. It's definitely worth the money, and it's one of the most well-written video games I could think of dialogue wise in a long time. Like, it's very, even if you don't play it, if you watch someone play it, I think you'll be amused just because of all the things that can happen. It's bananas. I think go check out Disco Elysium. Anywhere it's sold, I think it's like 20. Well, actually, I got it on sale for like $20, but I think it's like 30 normally. Good game, though. Definitely a good game. I was able to solve the crime and, you know, figure out all the clues and whatnot. But it's it's not super long. Surprisingly, being an RPG, it's really not as long as you would think. It's more so you can kind of get stuck on what to do next. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That I think that's the only difficulty there. And also, being an RPG, there is a rolling of the dice. So, like, let's say you're interrogating somebody and you want to convince them that you know something that you don't know. Depending on where you put your points when you upgrade or level up your character, let's say you're good at like slick talk or you're good at like lying. The higher, the more points you have in that skill, you have a better chance of getting a good dice roll. But regardless of what you do, there's a chance that you might fail. And so you roll the dice, and if it comes up, you know, in your favor, then you'll successfully be able to convince this person that you know information that you don't. If you fail that, though, you can you fail that conversation, you might not be able to go back to that later, or you might hit a blow to your morality. If you get too many of those, you just quit. Like, your person, like, gets so depressed that they just quit. There's a lot of different factors and layers in this game that I was not expecting at all. But it came out to be pleasantly surprising. So yeah, definitely check that out. Check out The South Side, South Side on HBO Max. Two good things I got to see and do over this past week. What about you, Tess?
Not well for several days this week. There was a lot of sleeping going on.
That's always good.
Yeah, and then also non-sleeping because Hermione doesn't let me sleep anymore. Like every 3 hours, apparently, is, you know, that's her sleep cycle. Mm. It's almost like 3 hours is like a month to her. And as you know, time passes quickly for dogs. But like, my sleep is all messed up. And I'm like, I don't know. She's not letting me sleep. So I did check out Netflix's video games.
Oh, right.
I thought that was really weird when I was like, what? There's Netflix games? Like, I opened Netflix on my phone. I think the only reason I figured that out is because I have Netflix on my old phone, which I used to cast to my bedroom television, and it just wasn't working. And so I had to put it on my current phone, and I think that's when I saw it was like, Netflix has games, you should download them. So I actually played this Netflix game, and it is called True Story, and it is about a woman. It's from Frost, the company is called Frosty Pop. And it's called This is a True Story. And the main character's name is Bontu. And you basically are kind of following along as she makes a trip to get water. So she lives somewhere in Eastern Africa.
Okay.
And she has to make a really long trek to get water for her household. And so you basically, it's a short game, you know, you can get it done in, I think, 30 minutes or so. And that's it. I think the artwork is very beautiful. Like the animations are low cost. I'm sure just cause you know, I'm just watching the animations, but like, the backgrounds are really pretty and it kind of just like details the savannah and it's a like 2D. So, you just have to walk like linear, you know, there's no depth to it or anything. So you're just walking linear and you have to, it's a very humbling story because it's your job to guide her. I mean, she's guiding you with her words, but you have to guide her through her trek to get water. And right. She is explaining how, you know, they moved to this area, the village, I guess I'm assuming they're nomadic and they moved to this area because of the river mouth, but the river mouth has dried. And so they have to go very far to another river. And, basically your job is to get water and you have to understand that it takes this woman an entire day to go and get water. Like she leaves her house in the morning and she has to walk all the way to get water and then walk all the way back. And by the time she comes back home, it's nighttime. And
that's interesting.
It's interesting. And it's just humbling because then you really have to look at yourself and your life. I mean, wherever you are, especially if you're in the Western world and you're living your life with your running water coming out of your faucets and your food from the supermarket. And this game is teaching you to walk pace basically in the shoes of someone who doesn't have running water in their home and literally has to walk to a dried river to get the smallest amount of water that she can, which she knows are flies and bugs around, and then walk to a larger body of water to get more to fill the actual jug because she couldn't fill it before. And then wait in line because there are 50 other women doing the same thing. And beware of leeches. while you're doing it. Just so you can go home and boil the water so that it'll be ready for for usage.
Thirsty in the morning, you're not getting a sip of water until the next day.
Yeah, she doesn't even get to drink water while she's walking. Like, it's very rough. It's like the game is just, it just kind of puts you in a place, because when you realize what you're doing, and she's narrating the whole time, she's telling you the story, and it's called This Is a True Story because it's really based on, you know, real people's lives. And, you know, like, she has to take breaks during you can't just keep moving. You have to rest under a tree because the sun is so hot. Sometimes at nighttime the wind blows, you have to avoid the sand. You have to avoid the poachers because there's poachers out there. You want to avoid pain. There were hyenas. They're literally hyenas. And she's like, oh, the last, you know, she knows somebody who got messed up by a hyena or whatnot. She's like, not trying to get caught. So, like, she does little things. But if you really think about it, like, this is not just put in as a game mechanic to entertain you. This is real. Like, this is actually what people have to do. Like, on their, you know, 7-hour trek to get water, you know, back and forth or whatever for water, they encounter savanna beasts. And she, like, picks up a rock and throws it so that they go to the distraction so that she can keep walking and not be seen. And just those types of things. I mean, there's other things that happen, you know, happy things. Like, oh, she walks past the school. She walks by some kids trying to play, you know, football. Like, all kinds of, like, normal stuff that would happen in your day. But these are I don't want to say tribulations, but these are the things that happen in these women's lives. And she's narrating, telling you stuff that's happened to her. Like, she's like, you know, the children get sick a lot because they're drinking unclean water, and it's really hard for them to go to school when they're sick all of the time. And she mentions how one time when she was walking to get water, she fell off of some, because you have to climb, like, some rocks to get past. And she's like, she fell, and she was wounded pretty badly. And then she gets up and goes to get water again very soon after being injured, because she's a mother and she has to do this. How else is she going to get water to her household? And she talks about how she has friends who are generous and who have brought her water. But, like, it's such a simple thing that we in our world are blessed enough to have access to clean water, where there literally are millions of people who do not have access to clean water. And their stories of how they live day to day are so amazing. And so they put this into a game. This, you know, company put it into a game. The narrator is, like, she's amazing. And
it looks good. I'm looking at the
artwork. Yeah.
It looks like, and I can't, like, it's close enough that it could be acrylic or oil paint, like the backgrounds and stuff.
Yeah.
It's very well done. And it's not something I expected to be in Netflix games, to be honest with you.
Exactly.
I just didn't. But not that they could. Most of these are, if you're looking at the app, they're mobile games. So, like, if this is something that was on a mobile, store, then of course it would be here as well. But it's not, when I thought of mobile game, or not mobile games, but Netflix games, I thought of all the different, like, types of Stranger Thing games. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't expect that. But that's really cool. It's under the educational banner. So,
yeah.
This is cool. Yeah. You should definitely check really that cool. out.
Definitely.
All right.
I like
that. I'm going to actually flag that so I can look at it later.
It's a short game,
And that's something else I love. We need short games. Good
no
grief.
More Valhallas.
Fam, the fact that I was able to get through a whole game, because I was like, you know what, I'm on a vacation, I'm gonna get through my backlog, because it's not a ton of games. There's games that I own that I've gotten, you know, maybe like Humble Bundle, like I got a bunch of different games and maybe I'll play, maybe I won't. But this was like, I have a set few of games, like a set few that I want to play because either like a sequel is coming out or it's something that people have talked about a lot, so I really want to try it, etc. So not every game that I've missed I'm going to go play because some of them I just don't care to play. But then there are the few that I'm like, you know what? I really want to try this. And realizing that a lot of them are really freaking long. And I'm like, I'm not going to get through many of my backlog, games this way. And so anything that's short, yeah, let me play that. Because then I played it. It's out of my system. It's gone. I'm not curious about it. And I can move on. But yeah, stuff like Valhalla where it's like 58 to 60 hours. I'm good, fam. I'm good. It's all right. And not to say that I will never play those again. But sometimes it feels like a job. And I already do this for a job. Like, I already play games and write about them. I in my leisure, which is hilarious in a sense, because I do that with games that are free to play, where you just kind of, you know, they change all the time, so you keep playing, like, Fortnite. But those are different in terms of how you play and how you go about that. So, yeah. It just was like, do I really want to do this? Do I? Nah, I'm going to play something else. So yeah, the fact that that is short, I'm definitely going to check that out when I get a chance. And I'm happy that Netflix is you know, trying their hand at different things. Because they need to, apparently.
They do.
One of our topics today, actually, is how Netflix has been in an interesting spot as of late. If you didn't know, Netflix announced that they lost 200,000 subscribers recently. And, you know, that part of that is due to, I know for a fact, is due to, you know, the regions that they removed Netflix because of the war. But then there's also the fact, this is more speculative right now, but them raising the price. And, you know, we were kind of talking about why that was happening and why people were kind of leaving off air. Because what happens is there's a trickle effect. We found out that they lost, their stock dropped, I want to say 35%. And so Netflix collectively lost, what, $55 billion in a day, which is bananas. Like, I don't have, like, the amount of money that is, that's a lot of money. A lot of money. Like, I don't think people understand how much a billion is to be able to fathom 55 of it being lost in a day. I think I would still be throwing up. I'd be throwing up all over the place. It's just a lot of money, right? And so then, you know, the stock drop, and like that's happened before, not to this extent, I don't think, but it's happened before. You know, they've lost subscribers, things have changed, and there's a lot of different factors at play, whether it be the price going up, the like overabundance of content, the competition, you know, stuff like that, that's making it a little tough for Netflix. But that also trickled down to them having layoffs recently. So we're gonna go into all that. But the first thing we want to talk about is them losing subscribers and why we think they're losing subscribers. Before anybody says this or rolls their eyes or whatever the case may be, Netflix does have good content. Shut your face. The fact that they were able to lose that many people and still be around is because there's a ton of people that are still on the, you know, that are still subscribed, and those people didn't come there for nothing. They have, Netflix has good content. However, I think one of the problems is that they release so much content so quickly that it's overwhelming to the point of you don't know what to watch. And, and if you're anything like me, you kind of go back to your comfort shows. Like if you go on Netflix, you're like, I want to watch something. If it's not something that's advertised immediately, like, hey, Stranger Things season 4 is dropping tomorrow, you're not going to, for the most part, you're just like, I'm just going to scroll the genres. And being that it's just so much, and the feeling that you know, you don't want to necessarily waste time watching something you're not going to like, if there's nothing being talked about online, socially, or whatever the case may be, you're going to go, you know what? Let me go back to whatever the heck it was I was watching before, because at least I know that's good. But if that happens too many times, you're probably going to be like, why am I paying for this? There's nothing on here. There is something here. You know how, like, you ever, like, when you were younger, open your fridge, and because the thing you want wasn't in your fridge, you're like, there's nothing to eat, even though it's like full of to eat. You know what I'm saying? That's what it was like. And, you know, at one point early on in the pandemic, Netflix was up. They were in the black. They were beating everybody badly. But they also were like releasing a film like every week. And I think I've watched like 10% of that. Because I don't even remember what was released. It was just so much content. And my life doesn't revolve around Netflix in that. There's I have too many interests for that to be a thing. And so I'm like, I'm overwhelmed. Like, I don't even know what to watch. Like, I don't know. And so I will then err on the side of like HBO. Cause like, oh, Insecure is out, or, oh, a new movie like The Batman, that was in theaters, you know, 30 days ago is now on HBO Max. Let me subscribe to HBO just to watch this real quick. You know what I'm saying? There isn't anything on Netflix like that outside of, I think next month is, Stranger Things season 4. Oh, there's also The Witcher, but there isn't too many things that are like, I gotta watch immediately. It's usually like, oh, that's dope. I'm gonna get to that eventually. Or it's just a sea of content that I don't know what's happening, you know? So I think the price going up and, you know, too much content. But then also I think that it was Netflix saying that they're gonna cut down on password sharing. And people hear that, they're like, I don't wanna. Like, that's a thing. Like, and Netflix actually encouraged this at one point, you know, sharing the password.
They did. They actually were like, they leaned into it. That's why I don't understand. Yeah. It's like, you knew.
Well, I get it now.
Yeah.
I totally get it now. When they're up, when they have enough money to cover everything, they don't care. But when you lose a crazy amount of subscribers, like really quickly, and you notice that you have a ton of people watching, but not all of them are paying. That's when you start to count your money. And because of that, they're like, you know, we're going to cut down. But I don't think that's necessarily the answer.
Now, it's granted, not.
I'm not an exec. I don't know everything. You know what I'm saying? But I do know that the more friendly you are with this stuff, I think the better. You know, with Amazon allowing people to stream, you know, if you have Amazon Prime, you can stream on Twitch, you know, certain movies there and people can watch it with you. Movies Anywhere allows you to, you know, share films that you've purchased or rented with other people. You can only do it a limited amount of times, but they allow you to share because of the pandemic. And so because of that, people are gravitating more towards it. I don't know if it's because there's the opportunity there to do those things or they feel like the company is nice, and so I want to be more loyal because they're nice. You know what I'm saying? Like an incentive. You gave me a coupon this one time. I'm coming back. You dig? And so I know, like, when you go against that, when you're like, you know, we're gonna make it so that you have to pay, that just spells trouble for you, especially considering that you don't necessarily know how to, or at least they haven't worked out how to distinguish between someone who is taking their Netflix somewhere else versus someone who shared a password.
Right.
Like, for instance, they were talking about, you know, you would have to pay if you're signed in somewhere else. But I'm like, what if I went to my mom's house, who doesn't have Netflix, and I wanted to watch mine, and I signed in on her smart TV, and we watched my Netflix? I'm actually physically there.
Yeah.
Am I going to have to be charged?
No way of knowing that.
Right. Are you going to charge me more? Now, thankfully, to be fair, most of my Netflix is covered via T-Mobile. But I'm saying, I'm not trying to pay more just because I signed in at a different place. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah, all of these things I think contributed to Netflix losing people. And I think what they could do, as opposed to canceling every show that they're canceling right now, is just not greenlighting so much content right away.
Yeah.
Like, or at least stagger how you release it a little bit more, because I haven't gotten through the stuff that came out in 2021. I haven't.
Yeah, like, I haven't gotten through the stuff that came out in 2018.
Right, like, it's just too much.
It's too much. I just finally managed to go back and watch Dave Chappelle's Netflix collection. Like, because I hadn't gotten there. I just hadn't. I hadn't. And you know me. Back in the day, a few years ago, I literally worked from morning to night. I was never home.
Right.
And I didn't have time for anything. And you would think, you know, hey, being home because you're ill and you have a concussion, oh, you have time for stuff. Not necessarily, because your head hurts. You know?
Right.
So no, I can't just watch TV all the time because my effing head hurts. But but there is way too much content in the manner in which it's like, just be a little bit more selective, please. Like, I like what they're put. I like a bunch of the stuff that's on, but it's almost like throw up. Like you just, you go to Netflix today and you're like, oh my God, it has 30 more titles today than it did yesterday.
Right.
And you're like, okay, like this, I mean, they have flagship stuff, you know, like that's their stuff. They have stuff that, you know, like stuff that's really popular, like Selling Sunset is really popular, right?
Right.
And I watched that show, like I've been watching all the reality shows just because I had, you know, I don't care about my life. And and like, these are popular shows. They get a lot of conversations going. Those reality shows feed a lot of online content. They do. They have a lot of, they have just, it's just buzz. It's not just like, oh, this is a really good show, I love it type thing. Oh, I watched this, so good. No, this is reality TV. These are real people. So, you know, after an episode airs, then you have the stars who are going on and, you know, talking and saying stuff, and it just creates more and more and more content. Those shows work. And so they have a bunch of them. You know, the entire Love is Blind series has now extended to Brazil and Japan. You know, it's like, wait, what? First of all, Love is Blind, the first season in America was crazy. And then they had the nerve to have a season two, which was just out of control. And then they were like, by the way, we've decided to do this in Brazil and Japan. And then they have the whole Too Hot to Handle thing, which is insane, because they had Too Hot to Handle I don't like to say countries because it's actually not countries, it's language. So they had Too Hot to Handle, like English speaking version, and they have Too Hot to Handle Brazil. So, but it's not like it's Brazil, you know, Portuguese. And then they have Too Hot to Handle Latino, which is in Spanish. So they have all these versions of the show. They did three seasons of Too Hot to Handle, which is so hilarious, because the first season was one thing. The second season, they had to lie to everybody because they can't know that they're in the show that aired already. And the third season, they literally took all the castmates from the third season, put them in another villa. They didn't even know they were literally filming right after the season two people left. Oh, wow. Like they did it. It's so smart. Like the production behind it was so smart. My point is, they have these particular shows which are popular, which get a lot of buzz because they're reality shows. Like, but then they go and they just like get like 30 green light 60 dramas that are that they're licensing, you know, not they're not producing, they're just grabbing. Right. And it's like, did you guys make sure that you had the subscribers for this additional content? Because my issue with them, and what makes me kind of irritated with Netflix as a company, because they had money issues, you know, before the pandemic. Especially way back in the day, they had money issues. When they were like, oh, we're not going to do discs anymore because it costs money, so we're just going to stream. Like back then, we had that whole issue. But like, I'm like, have you guys not learned any? I don't understand, because I think I'm just irritated with this idea that they think they can just buy up everything. They've got every anime now ever. They've got every K-drama. They don't even have any J-dramas. So that is just like two J-dramas. That's annoying. but like, they have this one Korean reality dating show, which is hilarious. So watch it, and season two is coming. Not the point. My point is, they have so much content that they're bringing, like grab. And then, but they're not checking the back end where their money is coming from. Your money is coming from the subscribers. That's how you guys are making your money. You know how much money you bring in. You know how much money you have from subscribers. It's the money that you are making from these subscribers is not covering the content that you're buying. I'm not even in this industry, and I feel like I can simply say that.
Well, I mean, that's been the case. Like, that's what made last year such a big deal when they announced they were in the black, because they weren't for so long. They were in the red because they were paying for things, hoping to recoup that money over time. And the problem with that, outside of it, that's a difficult thing to do anyways. And you're promising investors that they're going to get their money eventually, or, you know, like, we're going to be worth it eventually, right?
Right.
But then on top of it, it wasn't based on the subscribers that they had. It was based on the subscribers that they could get.
Right. So like, it was completion.
And so, like, with anything, you know, and this is in multiple fields, you know, in terms of capitalism, it's like, we have to...
Silicon Valley, we're talking to you.
We have to up everything. So it's like, you know, if you think about it in the video game world where they, you know, Call of Duty sells a certain amount of money, and then next year is like, look, we got to sell more than this. And it's like, you really don't have to. Like, you can afford not to. You actually made a ton of money, but investors are like, well, I'm going to invest more money into your company.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, we're going to drive up the shares. Then this product needs to sell actually more. And the problem is it's finite. Your audience is only... but so big. Now, granted, I think Netflix is good because they have so much content in the sense of style of content. If you're into anime, there's some anime. If you're into horror, mm-hmm. there's some horror. If you're into action films, there's some action films. There's a ton of stuff for you to watch and kind of peruse. The problem, I think, is that it's so much content that they've paid for up front.
Yeah.
And they're not getting the subscribers that they thought they were going to get. It worked a little bit in pandemic land because people were at home. People were... like, we need to watch something. We're going to be in the house all day. We need, you know, we got to look at something. And Netflix was there. Netflix had, like, out of everybody, had the best deal, even though it was more expensive than, say, HBO and whatnot. Mm-hmm. In terms of what you got immediately and in terms of the streaming product itself, you know, because Netflix is leaps and bounds better than a lot of these other streaming apps. It's like, oh, we have good content. We have good, you know, a really good trusted app. We can make this work. But then you started dropping movies every week, fam. And not just like regular, like, I don't want to say like low budget, but like, you got films with The Rock. You got films with, you know, you got what, two films with, God, what's that guy's name? I can't remember. But like, essentially, you had multiple films with all these stars. They're not cheap. I mean, yeah. I can assume that they didn't cost as much as if when you negotiate or set this up, you're not paying them as much as they would get, you know, for a film that's going to the theater, because there's no box office draw. So, you know, that is going to be different, but you're still getting The Rock. He's not cheap. Like, you know, you're not paying him a couple thousand to be in this film. That's never going to happen.
He's
right?
Like, oh, hey, Rock, can we get you on discount because of pandemic? So can you just do this for free?
He just look at you and raise his eyebrow and walk the hell away. Like, that's not what's going to happen. So then you have all this, you're paying for this all up front. It's like, all right, cool. The current subscribers that you have in all these different countries, the amount of revenue that you get, you would think that would be enough. But then you forecast like, oh, if we get, because that was one of the big things that made their stock drop. It wasn't necessarily just that people left. It was the fact that they had predicted or said that they were going to have like 2.5 more subscribers. And 2.5 million more subscribers by this time this year. And they actually lost 200,000. So you got to understand, if you're promising someone more than what you already have, you kind of have to meet that. And you have some stiff competition now. You know what I'm saying? You have
cheaper, doing Apple TV.
Apple has a Severance, apparently, is a great show. I'm going to get to that eventually.
It is.
You got... Peacock, which is mad cheap, but at the same time, even if you're not big on what Peacock has, they had films that are going to the theater also appearing on Peacock shortly thereafter, which is a big deal right now because people don't want to necessarily go to the theaters unless it's a big Marvel film or you know, Batman or something like that. So being able to watch these movies in a theater at your house, that's a big deal. So even though Peacock is like, what, seven, not even, I don't even think it's that, like $5
Peacock
or something like
that. Peacock is actually $5. It's $4.99, I believe. And if you have Comcast, you get it. If you signed up for Comcast within a certain time frame, you get it for free. I have it for free.
Bam. So there you go. And so like, I just saw that, because I got an email about it, because I actually subscribed to Peacock just to see the Halloween film. Mm-hmm. And being a horror fan, the Firestarter remake is actually coming to Peacock next month. So it's like, oh, I'm gonna get Peacock again. So when you have stuff like that, like, oh, the Halo show is on freaking, I forgot what, oh, it's Paramount Plus. I might get that. Or, you know, Disney Plus has all of the Marvel stuff, the different Marvel shows and whatnot, like Moon Knight. So you have these people, at the very least, even if they're not subscribed all the time, they're like, oh, let me jump on this now because this is something I want to see now. And the thing is, with Disney Plus, with Peacock, with Paramount Plus, is that they'll have one, not to say that they only have one show, but they'll have one show that's being advertised right now. And so what that does is it draws your attention to that. So even if you leave, even if those customers leave because that show is over, when the next thing pops up, it's like, oh, let me come back. With Netflix, again, outside of the really, really big things that are coming there, it's almost like everything is big. Mm-hmm. And so I might see a commercial about The Witcher and then totally forget about it because I just saw a commercial about Stranger Things. And then I forget about that because I saw a commercial for the movie Red. And then I forget about that because, mm-hmm. and it's like, it's just too much. I don't have time to watch all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, when I do finally get a chance to watch, if it's not super popular like Stranger Things, you cancel it. So now it's like, oh, well, I don't care about this big show anymore because you just canceled. You know what I'm saying? Like, I reviewed for IGN, I reviewed Raising Dion season 2, which was much better than season 1. Mm-hmm. And mind you, I wasn't necessarily shocked to hear that it was canceled just because it's not something that will draw new subscribers in. It'll interest people who already subscribed, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anybody is going to subscribe to Netflix just to see this show. Mm-hmm. No offense. But then to hear that it gets canceled, then you see people on Twitter, they're like, oh man, I kind of dug that show. It's like I don't want to trust, like it's like the trust is broken because Netflix does this a lot. If a show gets to season 3, it's lucky. It's really, really lucky if a show gets to season 3 with Netflix. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So like,
you have all these factors that are stacking up on one another because I don't think any other streaming service right now that I can think of, you know what? HBO. HBO did cancel the second season of Lovecraft Country. But the thing is, they didn't sign on for that either. Mm-hmm. That was something that was like, could be a thing. But for the most part, like, they didn't cancel Insecure. They got to finish that. They didn't cancel a ton of shows, right? They actually get to finish. Whereas Netflix, not so much. There's a ton. Like, just recently, a ton of shows got canceled. And then on top of that, like I said, today, the editorial site, Ta-Dum, which is the sound that when the logo pops up, it makes that Ta-Dum sound or whatever. That's what that comes from. It laid off a bunch of writers, which is really sad because these people were promised. These were journalists, entertainment journalists who were promised that they were going to get paid more than what normal, journalists make, which is great. They also were, promised that they wouldn't be laid off because this side of the world in terms of content, it's really hard, like keep things going for various reasons. And people get laid off all the freaking time, unfortunately. And so they prompt, like Netflix was like, nah, this is not going to happen with us. We got you. We got money in the bank. You know what I'm saying? So, but unfortunately, 5 months after they launched, because they launched in December, they're letting people go. And I can only imagine considering how quickly this happened after they lost however much money, in their stocks, that this is because of Netflix losing so many subscribers. But it's like from our understanding, or at least outside looking in, that Ta-Dum and, they have their digital and print magazine Q or whatever. Like, you have these different aspects that are under the main business. It's like, well, aren't they separate? Like, why should that matter? And right now, Netflix makes most of this money through the streaming services. Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately, that's going to trickle down into other places. Look, we gotta recoup. And not necessarily because Netflix is in dire need of money, but because people who are investing in them are upset. So if we promise, like, say, if we make the numbers really small, let's say we promise you, their investors, like, you're going to get at least 100,000 this year on top of what you would normally get from last year, and you can't fill that, then you're like, let me let go all these people. I can free up some money and now I can keep my investors happy.
Yeah.
It's essentially what happens. This happens a lot in the video game world.
It happens in all the industries because the investors are the only people that they want to keep happy. The end user, it doesn't matter.
And that's trash. And so a lot of people, a lot of good people, a lot of great writers are out of a job suddenly. And that's a horrible feeling. Like, this, I've been there and granted, I was given a month heads up. These people were like, they just came into work and then was like, hey, you don't work here anymore. It really sucks. And I hope Netflix can turn things around. I hope they can, get things back to where they could be. But I think they need to make some different moves. They need to, I don't know. I don't even know. They need to do something though, because yeah, people are, you know, it's the last thing you want to do is start firing people, laying people off, you know, potentially being sold under something else, cutting off, you know, legs of the company and all this other stuff to try to please these other people who don't really even care about the content that you have going on. You know what I'm saying? No.
So, and probably have their money in other companies. They'll survive.
Like, of course. It's yeah, two yachts, you know, as opposed to one. You know
right. what I mean? Exactly. I mean, and come on, Netflix. Things ebb and flow. You might lose subscribers in the spring because it's nice outside, but when it gets cold again, you might get new subscribers. So kind of chill.
I'm pretty sure.
In your name. Just Netflix right? and chill.
I'm pretty sure that some people are going to come back when certain big shows come back.
Yeah.
It just happens. It happens all the time. Or if there's a buzz. You get a show that like Squid Games. Huge yeah. buzz.
People when came, Squid like, Games comes back.
Right.
Like when that comes back and people, especially if they've locked down the stupid password sharing, which I don't know if they're going to figure that out, but people right. will, people will find a way. Like people will come back. If it's easier to just get a Netflix subscription and watch your favorite show. I mean, we also know one of their issues is that Netflix does the bit. They are the king of binge. Like they release an yeah. entire show. And so it's not, it doesn't keep people coming back every week. What like HBO, like, you know, it, you know, there's 10 episodes of The Gilded Age, which is one of HBO's newer shows. So for 10 weeks, you need to keep coming back. Whereas Netflix, it's mostly, they release the whole batch of the show. And, but we like them for that. More people subscribe to Netflix because they were doing that when with their shows, because remember when Netflix was just movies before, and right. so when they started putting shows on, it was the entire show. So once you start that binge model, you're not, the subscription doesn't make sense. And I don't know why Netflix, after all of these years of existing and hiring people and paying people big salaries, they haven't figured out a way to continue with their binge model, but make subscriptions make more sense. Because if somebody literally subscribes just to watch season 2 of Russian Doll, and after they binge it for the day, they cancel, that's on you guys. And I'm not saying that they need to find, like, make people stuck into their plan for the entire month or 3 month plan minimum stuff. I'm not saying that they need to do that. But it is up to them as a company to figure out how to continue to give the product that you offered, which nobody else had. Nobody else was allowing binging of an entire show. It literally created a culture.
Yeah.
Okay. And nobody was offering that. So y'all had them. You still have the monopoly on that, because Hulu at best of a new show will release 3 episodes at one time at best. And
it makes
that's
sense.
Not because of Hulu. That's because of the show's production team. They're like, no, we want to get people hooked. So let's give them three episodes. But my point is, it's your job, Netflix, to have figured out how to support the binge model. And yeah. not figuring that out is just lazy.
I wouldn't say lazy. I would say it's hard, right? Because, and not to say that, like, again, because I don't work in any of these mm-hmm. particular places, but I know, like, there's things that people do that are coming in later because, you know, hindsight, 2020 and all that good stuff, you know, where HBO might start a show in the middle of the month. Mm-hmm. So even if they were to release a bunch of episodes back to back, by the time the show is done, or at least that season is done, it's a new month. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay again, right? So at the very least, they're going to get 2 months out of you. Mm-hmm. And so like how you release it, when you release it, the timing and all that else, that comes into play. But again, Netflix has built up this culture of bingeable, you know, shows, right? Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to balance that because I personally would rather binge.
Yeah.
Because of time. because I can watch something back to back, and maybe, you know, it's like two films worth of content, and I'm done, and I can move on to the next thing. Whereas waiting each week, because there's so much content, and this goes back to just having too much stuff to watch, you get lost. Like I haven't gone back and watched the last two episodes of The Walking Dead recently because it was releasing each week and I forgot. And typically, you know, when it was cable, it was different. Like, you know, you timed it. You was like, you know, 8 o'clock on Sunday. You know what I'm saying? But like with streamed stuff, it's like, oh, I can watch it whenever. And that whenever mindset is like, I will eventually get to it, but you never do. That's what happened with the DVDs. You would have it sitting there and you're like, I'm gonna watch it when I get a chance. And then you forget. And then they got me for another month. I still got the disc. You know what I'm saying?
You know, it's like, that's how I ended up with Hamlet. I own Hamlet now because I never got
it. You had it for so long?
And I had it for so long that it became mine.
See, in a way that works in their favor. And so the problem though is like, if your customers want to binge, you have to kind of cater to that. I think that what you could do is maybe break up the seasons in a way that's like, you get a certain amount of episodes and it's like a mid-season break. And then come back because the next part, and they're doing that with Stranger Things. The final season, I think, is in two parts. So you have to, at least for the first month or the first, whenever the first thing drops, you have to subscribe for that month. When the second one is not going to drop until the following month. So that's at least 2 months of subscription out of you. Mm-hmm. If they did that with all of their shows, but not just for the final season, just for all seasons, where you can break it up, you still get kind of a binge experience, but you don't get all of it. So you're going to come back eventually. And then you don't have to shoot anything else. It's not like where you finish a whole season like, okay, we're going to have to shoot this next thing. We haven't even written the next thing yet. No, you've got it all shot. You just have to wait. I think that might be a better solution than doing it weekly because, and then also with that, some shows just don't work, at least in their format. They don't work weekly. There's a bunch of shows that I bounced off of because I was like, this is trash. And then when I went back and binged it, I was like, oh, you know what? If I could have actually gotten to episode 4 right away, it would have been okay. But episode 1 and 2 was kind of, and I'm not going to wait a whole week for something that might be trash. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like, it's a hard thing to juggle is my point, especially when you've built up a fandom that revolves around, I can watch my whole show on a Saturday night and it's great. I don't have to wait. Yeah, that's kind of rough. What I think would help Netflix prior to that, and we'll move on after this, was having shows that people can just kind of go back to. When they had TV shows like The Office and Scrubs, stuff like that, where you can, it's a comfort show where you can always go back to it. People were fine with that. I think once you remove those legacy shows, and you only have content that...
Now they're on Peacock.
Right. Yep. When you remove those legacy shows, I think that creates a void where it's like, what am I going to watch in between watching what I want to watch? And you don't have that comfort anymore. So you're like, I guess there's nothing to watch, even though there is.
Empty Next fridge syndrome.
Yes. Empty fridge. That should be the name of the show. and so like... The next thing we want to talk about very briefly, because I don't really want to talk more about Elon Musk at any point in life, but
yeah,
it's a thing that happened, so let's talk about it. Elon Musk is buying Twitter, and you know, when I found out about it, I thought it was hilarious in the sense that someone is basically, this is like white privilege to the max, I think, where like someone was upset about something, maybe like being censored, or, you know, they didn't like how they weren't allowed to say whatever they could say without any type of consequence, or just someone who didn't feel it, who felt the way about Twitter, was like, you know what, I'm going to go borrow a goofy amount of money and I'm going to buy it because I can do that, because I can flex. I'm going to flex on all of you hoes. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. I'm just going to buy Twitter. And so it was like after that, after I found it funny and just how ludicrous it was, I was also like, darn, this sucks, because this is even though Twitter can be a horrible place, it's also a tool that has been beneficial, especially to minorities when it comes to getting work, getting seen, getting your voice out, getting your content out. It's been a very valuable tool because it's such a interesting social thing. The fact that you could just post something that is you know, created in a way that's separate from Facebook, where you like you have to befriend people, and you know, it's built off of this community types thing, where like Twitter can be more so a free for all for just ideas that can go viral and that can, you know, get you seen from other people and all this other stuff. Like people have landed jobs because of stuff that they said on Twitter. Like I've literally gotten gigs because I was like, hey, you need somebody to do this thing? I can do this thing. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we need someone who could do that thing. You think Kenny could do that thing? I think Kenny could do that thing. Let's see if Kenny could do that thing. And then I was able to do the thing. It was all because of Twitter. So then to have someone that comes in who, and granted, I'm not saying that Twitter is going to be, that Twitter was ever a great place to be or a great site, because it can be very toxic. There are plenty of Nazis and just crazy people on Twitter. However, having someone come in and buy Twitter in the guise of like providing freedom of speech is just a bad thing waiting to happen. And it's all, I don't really need to go into why that's a bad thing. It should be very well like evident. Like it's I don't understand why you wouldn't see this as a bad thing.
Yeah.
Plenty of people who are smarter than me have already, you know, given you a laundry list of why. But like mm-hmm. I said, it's worth talking about even briefly, because it's a thing that's happening right now. But yeah, it's not a good look. I'm still going to be on Twitter. I'm not leaving, at least not yet.
Not yet.
Because again, it has helped me in my career. I might lock my account. Who knows? We'll see. But there's no need to like, you know, jump out of windows or anything like that. But there is, it is concerning. It is concerning.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like the biggest fan of Elon Musk, and I was a huge fan of Elon Musk long time ago when like the Roadster came out. Is that what it was called? The Tesla Roadster, you know?
I think so.
And then even for a period of time, I really liked him. I was like, oh my God, he's making these awesome cars. He's really innovative and X, Y, and Z. And so many people were calling him, what's that? There was that one guy, I think it was a Ford executive or something, said he was nothing more like he's a Ponzi. And yes. Yeah. And I felt like he was kind of a misunderstood entrepreneur. I was like, isn't this guy making really awesome cars? Like, why are you calling him a Ponzi? Like, he literally explained that he charged so much money for the first one so that he could make the second one so that he could make the third ones. I'm like, where did he Ponzi you guys? You guys got your product, didn't you? Like, type thing. but then he started hanging out with Azealia Banks and getting high and writing weird things on Twitter. And I was like, who is this dude really?
Bam. The fact that it's crazy because the fact his company doesn't actually make money off of the things that he sells. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's
weird.
It's like he sells credits. I don't even know how this works, but like he doesn't make money off Tesla.
No money made.
You know what I'm saying? But like he gets people to give him money somehow, and then he gets to do all these things. It's just, and this is what's happening with Twitter. Like you're getting something that doesn't make money, or using. I don't even know. It's a weird thing.
I don't know.
It's weird.
I don't know how Twitter makes money. I never really understood how Twitter and Facebook. I mean, I understand how Facebook makes money now, especially because Facebook is data mining.
Correct.
But back in the day, you know, like MySpace and stuff, I just thought that they were social platforms, and I don't know how they were running. I didn't know how much money it took to run them. I just knew that they were running and we didn't have to pay for stuff. you know, we didn't have to pay, and it's just what it was. I don't know how they were able to be. And then I watched the Facebook movie and I'm like, okay, so he made this thing, this social network, and then all of a sudden he got this really big office for all the nerds to hang out in and work at. I still didn't know where the money was coming from.
And to be fair, and when I mean fair, I don't mean fair. I mean privilege. Like a lot of these people got, you know, like Elon Musk, I believe got like seed money from like family or something like that, which he was able to start a company, which, you know, led to all this other stuff. And I think there is some ingenuity in how people maneuver in that space in order to maintain money, get more money from people who, even though you haven't actually made anything grand, mm-hmm. and but then at the same time, it's like it's a bunch of white people giving each other money. So
that's true.
It's like how great do you have to be? I mean, just kind of be lucky to be born in to a family that affords you multiple opportunities and a ton of freaking money to kind of do whatever you want, and then have people who will be diehard fans of you no matter what you sell. And so they'll buy anything. It's really a 1-2-3 step program. Like, you know, just start off rich and continue to be rich, you know, that's kind of how it goes. Rich.
And then, you know, things
stupid rich, like just, and to the point of just obscure amount of money, which is also interesting when you think about how they don't pay people enough and they don't, you know, there was this whole thing with Tesla not too long ago, actually, with being racist and having, you know, people like black people work in, you know, the field, as they would call it, or whatever they, I forgot the racist name that they called it, but like essentially picking cotton, like it was a
plantation
alluding. Yeah. They were alluding to that. You know, they work in the field. There was a lawsuit recently. I think they lost too. Don't, you know, quote me on that. I haven't read into it a whole lot. I just saw the foolishness a while back and was like, what? Are you serious? But yeah, essentially, you can do no wrong. And a lot of people who are, which is really funny too, but a lot of people who are like, you know, I was censored on Twitter. And then all of a sudden, Elon Musk bought Twitter. And now all of my content is back and I can do whatever. And it's like, fam, you realize that the deal hasn't gone through yet. It actually is going to take a little while. Mm-hmm. All Twitter did was like, the boards were like, we accept it. Now it has to go through the legal process. Nothing has changed yet, like, at all. It's wild how people, like, trick themselves into stuff. Like, they just, I don't know, read a damn book. Anyways, the last thing we wanted to talk about was Nintendo, who are also going through some stuff. Nintendo has had a great time with the Switch in terms of just the amount of money that they're making, that, you know, their games are selling like hotcakes. Like, Nintendo's doing really, really well, especially coming off of the Wii U. And, you know, it's every company has their issues, and apparently Nintendo is not exempt. Apparently, Nintendo of America, I'm looking at Kotaku. Shout out to Ethan, and I think it's Sissy? I'm hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, but they basically wrote about how Nintendo of America contractors feel like second-class workers. They're not being, you know, paid as much as they should, and they feel exploited. One person who brought up the idea of unions was fired mid contract, because with contract work with a lot of companies, they outsource, they do contracted work as opposed to doing full-time employees, because you have to give them things like, you know, a decent wage and like benefits and stuff like that. And all that stuff costs money, and you know, you don't want to pay that. So you get contractors who can work longer for less. And so, you know, they work through an agency. This particular agency was Ashton Carter, and they are supposed to, you know, they're basically staffing Nintendo for people who are going to work on their games, help to finish up games and stuff like that. And they're actually, there was a, some of the workers filed a, I want to say a lawsuit against Nintendo of America, basically stating that they were always under surveillance. There was retaliation, like when the person brought up unions and how they got fired right after, and just unfair labor practices. Now, the tricky thing about this is that there's no hard, I guess, spot you can pin it on, because you have the contract agency, Ashton Carter. You also have Nintendo of America. You have Nintendo of Japan. And Nintendo of Japan is the main company. And so we don't know how much of wiggle room there is. We don't know if there's like Nintendo of Japan is like, this is how we operate. And so you need to fire that guy for talking about unions. Or if it's Nintendo of America being like, hey, don't rock the boat because we work under Nintendo of Japan and they're kind of strict. So mm-hmm. you're fired. Or if it's because Ashton Carter is like, hey, Nintendo can go with another contractor if you rock the boat, so you're fired. We don't know. We don't know which entity, or was it a collection of all three. We just know that some stuff went down. And the contractors are made to feel, you know, it's like one of those things where you want to work for this company. It's a notoriously legendary company, and you feel like you got your foot in the door, and hopefully if you do enough contracted work, you might get a full-time job. That's the carrot that's, you know, on the end of the stick. But you have to go through all this BS, essentially, to mm-hmm. kind of get there. And even when you do become a full-time employee, there's other stuff that comes in the way. One story I wanted to share real quick was that I guess someone fell while they were working or like coming into work and had a, you know, had a head injury. And they were like, there's an on-site like clinic that she could go to. And they were like, you can't come in here because you don't have insurance because you're not a full-time employee. You are mm-hmm. a contractor. So she was like, okay. She went to ask a full-time employee like, hey, can you drive me to the hospital? I hurt myself. And they're like, we can't do that. It's against, you know, company policy to actually drive you someplace because, you know, we might be, you know, considered liable and all this other stuff. So she had to freaking Uber to get care. She hurt herself. And there's a whole clinic, like a whole ass clinic, like there where she can get checked up on, you know?
Because she's a contractor, she's not allowed to use the clinic?
Right. She's not allowed to. Because she's not a full-time employee.
That sounds, you know what? I just to interject, that is real stuff because I used to be a contractor when I worked for the federal government. And those rules are legit, real, and really strict. You do not get to enjoy the same, and I'm not going to use the word luxuries because there's no luxuries when you work for the freaking but I mean, I'm talking about separate entrances type thing. I'm talking about if you're not wearing your badge at all times, showing you're a contractor, you're in violation or stuff, or no, you can't use this like the health program because you're not an employee, because you know they're having all this huge government like or agency wide program for you know health. And you're not allowed to, you know, you can't use the gym. You can't use the facilities. You can't shower here. You can't use the clinic. Like, because we had a clinic too. I think we were allowed to use it, but there were certain things we couldn't have. Like if you needed to lay down, you could lay down or something, but I can't really remember.
Hey, just look, you can lie in the corner over there. Like, just don't touch anything. Like
yeah, no, like
don't
seriously,
get blood on anything.
It's true, and I don't mean to interject, but I'm like, no, the contractor rules are so real. Like some places you can't even use a bathroom.
All right, that's just trash.
I know
people.
I'm not saying that didn't happen at the government. That didn't happen like where I work, but I know there are. Some places it's like that. It's that.
So you got to go home to use the bathroom?
There's.
Fam, if I have to go home and it's not like an emergency, mm-hmm. I'm not coming back. Not.
Right.
Like.
Not.
Like, what are we doing?
There are a lot of rules for contractors. It's crazy.
It's bananas. It's really. And like, so then, you know, and because a lot of people, when this story kind of broke, a lot of people were like, well, a lot of companies do that. I'm like, if it's wrong over there, it's still wrong here. Like,
still
let's
wrong.
Not do, right, let's not do whataboutism, you know, to kind of click, because you love Nintendo. Stop it. It's trash. And so, like, you know, there's people who want to be, and that's the thing. It's so trash because you have, first of all, you have enough money. Like, Nintendo has a lot of money. But then mm-hmm. you have these people who are essentially putting up with this mess because they really, really, really want to be a full-time employee of Nintendo. Like, they just want to have that on their resume. They want to have that because they believe in Nintendo, whatever the case may be. And, you know, they grew up with Nintendo. And so they're, and like, Nintendo or whoever is in the wrong here is like, you know what? We don't have to. We don't have to give you anything because we know as soon as you leave or get hurt or whatever the case may be, we can replace you with the dozens of other people who want to jump in who don't know anything about what's happening here. It's similar to like when I was working at GameStop. People would come in and be like, this must be the greatest job ever. You get to play games. And I'm like, who told you that? Like, mm-hmm. at what point? Do you see me playing games? Do you see? That's not a thing. Unless we're playing the will you pre-order this game. You know, or me trying to sell you some Game Informers, like, dude, we could play that game. But there's not a whole lot of game playing here. There's a lot of work. you know, for very little pay. That's a thing. But no, that's not. But because it's video games, because people want to do it, it's like, oh, this looks like a good thing. This mm-hmm. looks like something I would be, you know, I'm enamored with what it is you do. And I would like, without knowing anything about it. And so I would like to do that. So you would think like you have people who are, you know, in this case, testers who, you know, help to make the games better, you know, to get out the door and whatnot, that make very little, you know, I think it's like $16 an hour. But they, you know, living in Seattle, it's not the greatest amount of money considering where they live. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only a few people make like $20 and over. And you know, and that's full time. That's not contracted. And so, you know, the contractors are making less than that and they don't get any benefits. They still have to work a lot. They do have breaks. Those are mandatory breaks that they had to have. And this is something that started, you know, with Microsoft, after there was a class action lawsuit a long time ago. Where this weird, like, they're being treated like they were temp people, but they were treated like full time in a sense that you just stay that way the whole time. And so what they did is they break up the contracts to be a certain amount of months and then you get a break and then you can come back. The idea is that you would do this because, hey, I have experience now. Maybe you can hire me full time when you have a, you know, instead of hiring outside of the company, you can hire me because I've been here for like 11 freaking months. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case. And so, yeah, it's just rough. And after a while, people are like, you know what? We need to unionize. We need to, you know, get it together. And there was pushback and people got fired. And so now it's like, okay, we're going to go with a more legal aspect and potentially sue. And so all this stuff is coming out. On top of that, Nintendo was having an issue with their Joy-Cons. Now, we know about the Joy-Con drift issue and how their Joy-Cons, if you played any of them for any amount of time, eventually they'll start to drift to one direction and you have to get that fixed or get it replaced because it'll get to the point where you just can't play the game that you're trying to play. Mm-hmm. And Nintendo was doing a free repair system where if you mail them in, even if they're out of warranty, they'll go ahead and fix them for you and mail them back. Well, Nintendo outsources, like, because that's what companies do. And if you were, you know, submitting your repairs on the East Coast, you were sending them to a company called United Radio. And this is actually because I actually just got our Joy-Cons back from this place. And this is before I knew this. Apparently, according to a former supervisor there, this is also pulling from Kotaku, they were like overwhelmed with the amount of Joy-Cons that came in. And Nintendo mm-hmm. was kind of, you know, Nintendo had this issue because people were starting to sue them. They were like, you know, you have a Joy-Con problem. You have a controller problem. And, excuse me, you know this is a problem and you continue to make these and sell these and blah, 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 blah. Nintendo's like, we're going to fix it. But Nintendo's not doing it themselves. They're outsourcing. Mm-hmm. And so send it to these companies. The companies have to fix it and return them. But because there's so many coming in, they're overwhelmed. This wouldn't uh-huh. be a problem if, you know, they're like, okay, we have a lot coming in. We're going to extend the amount of time that it takes to repair, or mm-hmm. we're going to hire more people.
Yeah, hiring more people sounds like smart.
Like a smart idea. They didn't do any of that. Instead, they kept the strict deadlines and was like, you just got to get it done. And because of that, there was a ton of mistakes. People got the wrong equipment back, mm-hmm. Just a whole bunch of stuff. And people were like stressed out and just, you know, and it's like the company in and of itself was like, you know, it's essentially, it's, you know, they were sorry that there was mix-ups, but going back inside the company, they're like, you guys need to get it together. They didn't fix it. They didn't try to repair things, ironically, with the workers. They just tried to save face with the people who were, you know, sending in their products and stuff. Because when you send it in, you're thinking, oh, Nintendo's is fixing this. So if Nintendo looks bad, Nintendo's gonna be like, hey, United Radio, what's good? And they're gonna be like, don't worry. In other words, don't remove your contract. We will fix it for you. Mm-hmm. And then they go back and turn to the employees and be like, you want to be fired tomorrow? If not, get it done. Instead of hiring more people because they want to keep the contract. Yeah. Essentially is what I'm getting for that. And so what happened is we got multiple class action lawsuits. And it's like, dang it. Like there's no, I guess, wiggle room here in a sense. Even with it not necessarily being a Nintendo company, Nintendo's working with them. And so there's got to be some type of oversight. There's got to be some type of, you know, you stepping in and being like, okay, we don't want you to work them like slaves. We just want you to get this thing done in a proper manner. So if you need more time, just take more time, hire more people. Maybe if we paid you a little bit more on our end in terms of contracted work, maybe you could hire more people.
Yeah.
Wherever the case may be, you should not be getting sued. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's this. And so the reason why I bring up these two stories up is because there's this collective, I don't know, thought that contracted people are less than because mm-hmm. they're contracted. Even people who are defending Nintendo is like, well, they're contracted. There's your problem right there. They're not full-time. It's like, fam, all that means is that you're given a job to do for a certain amount of time. That's it. It doesn't mean you need to be paid less. Heck, I was contracted for a while and I was paid really freaking well.
Yeah.
Luckily. But all it means is that you're paid through an agency to do a job. Excuse me. For a certain amount of time, you're not full-time. That's all that means. I get it in terms of health benefits, right? Because that's something that they do for full-time. But everything else, you should be treated like a regular full-time employee. You have regular hours. You do regular work. You get paid a decent wage. That's all it is. They don't want to know. They don't necessarily want you for the full-time. Or it might be something where, like, you know, hey, it's the holidays. And we know, like, a lot of people are buying Switches on, you know, during the Christmas season. And so we need to ramp up, you know, like any store, we need to ramp up on people. And once that season is over, we kind of don't need you anymore. So you're contracted. But during that entire time, you are paid like everybody else. That's all it is. It doesn't mean you're less than. And too many people see that as a thing. Like, this is just what you got to go through to be employed there. Or this is just what you got to go through because you're contracted. And it's like, that's not what it means, people.
Yeah. Like,
these are humans that are being treated very poorly at one of the biggest gaming companies on the planet.
Yeah.
Even though it's indirectly.
Yeah. That's not good.
Definitely.
It's not good at all. It just seems to suck all around. I mean,
right.
And when these problems that keep happening with all of these companies, they seem so avoidable.
Just, like, not be trash.
Yeah.
Just not be trash. Like, I'm not in accounting, but I just kind of know that you could pay people decent wage. I just kind of know that based on how much money you got coming in. Because when you have, unless, you know, because we love to pick on Amazon, right? If you look at, you know, Amazon, you know, the CEO of Amazon or whatever, and how, you know, people were like, we're not getting paid the right amount, you know, working their warehouses and all this other stuff. And people are like, you know what? All his money is in, you know, it's in stocks, it's in all this other stuff, right? And then, but then you look and go, oh, look, every year he takes out money to buy, like, the dumbest things. Like, hey, I want to build a rocket ship.
Yeah.
If you have enough money to build a freaking rocket, you have enough money to pay your employees. I'm sorry. Even if you get it out of your pocket, you have enough money. You do.
And it's something that I'm sorry to interject. It's something that I feel really passionate about because I kind of get upset. I see all these people, especially online, that are like jumping to the billionaires' defenses. And I'm not saying that just because you're rich, we should all be ragging on you, because that again is unfair. That's another form of like just being discriminated against because, oh, we hate you because you're rich. And no, it's just that it's so interesting that Amazon actively attacked the guy, I forgot his name, the one who successfully created the union.
Oh, right. And, yes.
Yeah. They did all of these things. I mean, there's record of it. There's recorded phone calls. There's paper trail that they actively tried to destroy this man for speaking out about work conditions and not being paid. And Jeff Bezos even was on some of those communications, because people are like, oh, you know, he didn't have anything to do with it, but he was on some of those communications. Like, this stuff trickles down. It comes from the top. And right. Nobody is saying that he shouldn't be allowed to be a billionaire or something. He co-founded Amazon, whatever. I was in high school when Amazon became a thing. And we all know that that's a long time ago. Right. So, but when you have hundreds of thousands of employees and they're suffering, but you are on a spaceship, how come
Like, I'm not saying that you don't get to enjoy nice things. You have nice things. In fact, you have so many nice things that you cheated on a nice thing with something that you thought was a nicer thing. And then you had to give half of your money to that one. Like, you have that much money. You have so much money that you can break up your own marriage and then pay somebody half of what you have.
Right. And, it's saying, not even like, it doesn't even affect you. Like,
no, it doesn't even affect you. So like, I personally know a company owner, a CEO of a company, well, executive chairman of a company who literally did not take a paycheck for a year, for a whole year, did not take a paycheck from his own company so that he could make sure his workers were paid.
See, that's rare.
It is so rare, and I don't know, the word's not coming to my head, but like, I want to say like shameless. Like, it's such a good thing.
Because like, if we're being honest, they don't need the money. Like, if you've ever made, forget a billion, right? If you made like $2 million, let's just say two. I'll do more than that. Let's say 300 million, mm-hmm. Because these guys have a lot of money. Let's say 300 million, unless you have a house that costs $1 million a month,
right?
You know, something along those lines. But like 300 million a year is still a bananas amount of money. If you didn't work for the next 5 years, you would be 100% okay.
Yeah,
you would. Now, granted, no one would want to do that. Well, yeah, you like, that's a major vacation. Like, that would be lovely, right? But again, you just don't need the money, in a sense, because you can buy whatever you want. You know, I outside of just bleeding money just because, like, you just, mm-hmm. I don't know, you bought a unicorn that only eats golden apples or some junk. And so the taxes on him is like bananas, and you just have to keep paying that. Mm-hmm. Don't look at me like that. It's, you know what it is.
It sounds like a lot.
Right. If you have something along those lines where it's a lot of money, I can understand, like, hey, we got to work this year. Maybe last year we couldn't work, but this year we got to work because my unicorn, it's big. It's a big unicorn.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Apples are, you know, rare.
They're expensive. You know what I mean? But that's not the case. If you wouldn't buy a rocket ship, you could feed these people. You don't need this stuff.
It's so simple.
Like, Elon Musk sent a car into space. You said what?
John Mackey did the same thing. The former CEO of the co-founder of Whole Foods. He stopped taking a salary after a certain period of time. He reduced his salary to $1. I know some people that I worked with are like, oh, that's nothing because he still makes money. And I'm like, but it doesn't matter if he still makes money. The point is that he still makes money off of other things. Like, he has stock options, but his salary, like the salary of a CEO, however much $600,000 a year. I don't know how much it was at that point in time, but he made it $1.
Right.
Because he didn't need the money, so that the money could go back to people. Like,
yeah, once you get to that point, like, you don't. Again, he, like, you know, he's making money. Like, I remember, well, I think it was Bill Gates was talking mm-hmm. about how if he dropped a dollar, and don't quote me if this is not super accurate, but he was like, if he dropped a dollar, like $100 in the street, it would actually cost him more money to turn around and pick it up than it would if he just kept walking. Like, he's making money. That's how much money he's making. And so at a point, it's like, I could just not. And I could be okay. Like, I could turn off the faucet money-wise mm-hmm. and then turn it back on years later and be totally fine.
The only
time you wouldn't be is if you're trying to invest, you're trying to make a new build, company or something like that. You have to invest a ton of money. But that's... Hopefully I would imagine you're not doing this every day. And so, yeah, you could literally lower your salary to nothing and be perfectly fine. You could still buy that yacht.
Yeah.
You can. You know what I mean? So, but anywho, I like, Nintendo can afford to pay people properly. They can, you know, outsource to better companies. They can do, and I don't know if this is Nintendo of America doing shady stuff, or if it's Nintendo of Japan telling Nintendo of America to do shady stuff. Don't know. Nintendo hasn't. They did release a statement about the lawsuits, but they haven't released a statement in terms of, you know, what they plan on doing or what the they're going to do in terms of the Joy-Con situation. They haven't. They're kind of looking into things. But beyond that, they haven't really said anything. And so we'll see. But I just is how well they've been doing for the past few years. They're not hard up. They're not. Yeah. Like, it's especially considering that paying people decent amount of money, the amount of contracts that you have, it would not equal to anything remotely close to the CEO's salary. Yeah. It just wouldn't, you know? But yes, that is our show for this week. Hopefully you enjoyed our banter about Nintendo and a little bit about Elon Musk and Netflix doing some interesting things money-wise. definitely, if you're listening to this on YouTube, feel free to subscribe and hit that notification bell so you're up on all the new content that's coming out. If you're listening on Spotify or iTunes, you know, any place like that, definitely subscribe and add us to your RSS feed so you know when we, you know, launch another episode. Definitely check us up at the GameCast1 on Twitter. Feel free to follow me on KennyUFG and, you know, Messy Tessie Bakes or just Messy Tessies on Twitter for Tess. Something like that. It's all below. You can read it all below. And yeah, I believe that's it for housekeeping. We have some cool stuff coming up in the near future. As long as we don't get sick and, you know, life doesn't happen because, you know, whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of content. Just the crap that, not crap, that's the wrong word, but the stuff that Netflix puts on their streaming platform daily, it's just enough that we could talk about for the rest of the year.
But yeah.
Beyond that, there's a lot of cool things. And definitely in the comments, I've seen some people leave comments about things that we talked about, you know, liking our conversation. If you want us to talk about a specific thing, definitely let us know.
Yeah.
We'll look into that. I can't promise you, but if it's on one of the apps that we have, we can definitely check it out. I hear tell of Vox Machinima, I think that's what it's called, or Vox Machina, Vox what? Machina? Vox Mac? Okay, Vox Mac. My wife just corrected me. Vox Machina. All right. On Prime, I hear that it's good. So maybe that. Maybe we'll check that out.
If it's better than the Wheel of Time, then sure.
I think it doesn't. It just has to be at this point, considering what you've said about it. I think it just has to be better. I mean, it's animated, so they get some cool points there. But you know, we'll see. But yeah, definitely follow. Definitely let us know what you want to talk about, and we will definitely do that. That's it for housekeeping.
Just remember to be kind, wash your faces, wash your hands, wash your butts, please.
Yes.
And, you know, all this mask stuff is confusing, but my take is still wear a mask. I wear a mask everywhere I go. People look at me like I'm crazy. I don't go very many places. I've told you guys this. But when I do go places, I'm wearing a mask.
Yes.
So, because COVID still exists. And, you know, I know people who got COVID recently. So, point is, don't be that person.
Yes.
Don't be that person who spreads COVID because it's still out there. Also, apparently, polio is making a comeback.
Are you serious?
I don't mean to extend this, but it's in the news. You got to go read it. It's vaccine polio, though. It's the kind of polio you get from the vaccine. And this is not any anti-vaccine type thing. This is it's happening in, you know, non-Western countries where most people are vaccinated with the live culture polio, whereas in the United States, UK, other places, we're vaccinated with non-live polio. Mm. And so other countries, you know, continent of Africa, Middle East, South Asia, Southeast Asia, Indian subcontinent, places like that are being vaccinated with the small amount of live polio in the vaccines, which, mind you, is not a problem. It's good for them because they don't have access to like the refrigeration and stuff that you need for the ones we have here. The issue is that the water supplies aren't clean, and so they can get infected from the water supply. because basically the when somebody's vaccinated with the with that the live virus, it sheds, it can shed through your stool. And if the water supply isn't clean, somebody can become infected depending on how strong the virus is after it passes through the body. So if it passes through the body weak and it infects the water supply, that actually will help inoculate other people because they will then have gotten the small amount of virus. Their body will fight it off and they will be vaccinated. That actually is a good thing. However, if the virus mutates and lives in the stool and becomes some in, you know, becomes stronger like viruses do, hello, Omicron, Delta, that's what that's the nature of them. They find ways to live. If that happens, then and it infects the, like the water supply, then people can get polio, and which it's actually happening. I did read that on the news that that is a
thing.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it now. That's
So didn't mean to turn us that direction, but it is something that's happening. So yeah, if you wanted to worry about that and Ebola, there you go. Have a good night, everyone. We're gonna end on that. Great talking to you. Hope to see you next week. Bye-bye.